and stop here for a second before you go any farther, because what I want people to understand too is, up until this point, you guys were wearing body cameras, right?
Yeah, our body cams are activated.
Body cams are activated. That's so you're capturing everything from, you know, when the first gunfire happens, the vehicle backs up and he goes running off. You've got this all on body cam.
Yeah, it's on our body cam as well as our dash cam. And okay. Yeah, and so he turns around and he flicks around at me, you know, his little ghetto shoot, and he hits me just below my vest. So I see him pointing, and we'll go back a little bit. I see him pointing towards me, and so I'm trying to get off the X. I'm extending my weapon out at the time to fire, and he fires one off first, and it hits me below my vest.
And you know the thing that sucks? I'm sorry. It's that these sons of bitches who don't spend any time at the range
will hit anything, anytime.
They hit the one exposed piece, you know, the one exposed area. Now, I mean, thank goodness, we don't want to say thank goodness it was the abdomen, but you've got soft armor on. Do you have a plate on or just soft armor?
It's just soft armor at that time.
Okay.
Yeah, so if I didn't punch out and I was a little bit lower, it would have hit me right in the bottom of the soft armor. But since I was punched out, my vest raised up just a tad. And I got off, I moved to the right. And luckily, I moved to the right. Because we'll just say this, if it had struck me a little bit more in the more center of my stomach, I probably either would have bled out internally or I would have had some bad damage.
Mm-hmm. When he shot you, did you know you'd been shot?
Yes. So, because what happened was, is it hit me, and as I was extending out the fire, I had fallen back. So it kind of knocked me down. It was a 45, so it had some power.
Jesus, yeah.
Yeah, so it knocked me back. And so at the time, I'm looking at him reverse prone through my legs, and I'm shooting at him through my legs.
Now, I hate to get technical here for a second, but were you, as you'll find out later, was it full metal jacket or jacketed hollow points?
No, it was a hollow point.
See, that's even worse.
Yeah, so I'm shooting from my back. My partner that wasn't hit on the ground, the one that was running around and yelled gun, he's behind a dumpster. So he had cover. I didn't. So I was a little bit in the gray, in no man's land. So I'd fallen back. I'm shooting at him. He's shooting at him as well. And then there's a concrete wall that he climbs up, and I'm shooting at him while he's climbing up the wall. And so is my partner. He drops down in there. At the time, I didn't know if it was enclosed. I didn't know if it goes out to the street. And so I saw that he had dropped down. There was no fire going on. So I jumped up and I looked down and I saw there was blood. But I knew I was okay. I knew my adrenaline was going to be high and I knew there was going to be no pain, but I wasn't like, there was no internal pain. I know I put some pressure on my stomach.
Said you saw blood, you were talking about seeing your own blood, not blood from the suspect.
Right. I saw my own blood.
Okay.
And it was on my pants. I think it was just, you know, that first initial impact had put some blood out on my pants and, you know, my uniform a little bit. So I'd gotten up and ran towards my partner that was behind the dumpster. And there was a wall. So basically, he hopped over a wall, and then there was another parallel wall that was around the dumpster that my partner was on. And so I run up to him. I let him know, hey, I'm hit. I'm good. Just cover up high and we'll figure it out. So we're both looking around. My partner's calling it out on the radio. And
is this the first time you guys call it out on the radio?
So at the time, so the gunfight happened so fast. We had like literally no chance to essentially call it out at the time.
Okay.
So when we called it out,
your signal for calling it out? Did you just use plain speech like shots fired, or do you have a signal?
Yeah, just shots fired. So we just started yelling shots fired on the radio, and people were asking where we're at. So we were telling them where we were at. And at the time when I was on that wall with my other partner, he's looking the other way. His girlfriend is hysterical. Or whoever she is, she's screaming. Everything is chaos. And
she stays in the vehicle, or does she get out?
She got out. And, but I'm looking down the street because that's what, like I said, the alley had ended right where we were at. So we were actually on a side street, and I looked down there. Nobody saw him. So it was enclosed. We had thought he maybe hopped it and whatever. We didn't want to peek our head over that wall because obviously we didn't know if he had the gun still or not. Mm-hmm. So my partners were so concerned about me my partner had gotten off the ground and he heard me say that I was hit, and he goes, get in the car. We're going to go. So he goes, we'll find this guy. He goes, just get in the fucking car and let's go. So I hop in the back seat and, they're calling it on the radio, telling them to let the hospital know that I'm on my way. And I'm in the back seat, just kind of like trying to process all this. And I'm like, holy shit, like this just fucking happened. It was like 15 seconds and it was like shit show.
You're a strap looking dude. I mean, as a trooper, I would have been pissed. I would have said, you son of a bitch, you ruined my uniform. I mean, it's like you got blood on my stuff,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So actually, actually, what's funny is we'll get into that because I did get pissed about my uniform. So, but we'll get into that.
Because you had to earn your greens. That's what I'm talking about.
I did. I had to earn those greens. And so we're on our way to the hospital and I'm just processing everything. I'm like, holy shit. Like, how the fuck did that just happen? And luckily, we were at the end. So like the Greenfield road that we were on was like the end of our precinct, and the hospital was literally like 3 miles down the road. So we go to the hospital and they're calling it out, and we pull up and they have a gurney coming out, like flying out of the hospital. And they ask, I get out of the car and I just walk up to the emergency and they're like, so who's fucking shot? And I'm like, I am. They're like, can you lay down? How about that? And I'm like,
can you at least pretend to be a victim of a shooting?
Yeah. So they're like, can you just lay down? And I was like, yeah, I guess. So I kind of just like jumped and I hopped up on there and, at the time they were taking off my vest and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And
the dangerous part is you still got the round inside you. That's why I'm saying the difference between a jacket and hollow point and a full metal jacket. Full metal jacket may be a through and through, but not a hollow point.
No, right. So when I first got shot, I was like, okay, I wish it kind of went through, but I didn't know it was a hollow point. So when I saw it was a hollow point, I was like, yeah, if that came out, that would have blew chunks of my back out.
Well, or as you're hopping up and down, dickhead.
Vital.
Yeah. Oh, I was fine until I jumped up and down. Then I severed an artery,
Yeah.
And now
Right. Yeah. That's a good call.
Okay. Sorry to call you dickhead. I'm sorry. It's late night.
You're fine. You're fine. Yeah. That's okay.
We're even now for throwing shade on a trooper. So from now on, it's just mad respects. All right. So
yeah, it's all good. So,
before you get into this, sorry, one more thing. When you call out officer down, or officer shots fired, most everybody wants to get involved at that point, right? So what's the response like? Do people still maintain like beat integrity or precinct integrity, or is it just like, hey, I'm within a half a day, I'm coming,
Oh yeah, it's usually like that. And they'll keep the radio, obviously, like the radio clear and everything like that. Yeah. Yeah, clear the air. And I actually got on the radio and I said, just like, hey, 836, I'm hit. But like, I didn't say I was good. And now that I think about it, I should have been like, hey, I was 836, I'm hit, I'm good. Like, but so just so everyone knew, because obviously like all of our other people in special operations that are in my precinct were obviously listening. And
married at the time, right?
No, not at the time. We were actually engaged.
Okay.
So we go into the hospital and, this is where I got pissed about my uniform, because they cut my freaking $80 tack pants off and I was pissed. I'm like, dude, chill out. Like I'm okay. Like I'm fine.
I'm telling
you,
those paramedics and those medical people, they get those scissors and they want to cut shit. It's like, I can just undo my belt. No, we're going to cut through it.
Yeah. They cut my pants right off and, they cut my underwear off too. And my partner's right there and he's fucking looking at me and I'm like, dude, my eyes are up here, bro. Like I'm fine. Just don't look down there. Like
maybe
I'm scared.
He's jealous. I don't know.
I don't think so. I was a little nervous. So it was,
Okay. We're not going to go there.
Yeah, we're not going to go there. We won't go there.
It's the turtle analogy, but we'll work with you. So
yeah. But, so I'd gone in there. They're like, oh, we need to go get a CAT scan like immediately or whatever. So like they take me to the CAT scan and I personally, I mean, obviously I'm not a doctor. I didn't know what was going on internally, but I knew that how I felt, like I knew I was on adrenaline rush, but I knew I was starting to come down a little bit. I knew I was okay. Like in my mind, I was saying, dude, you're going to be fine. And it sounds crazy. It sounds crazy, but I was actually reading a book by David Goggins. I don't know if you guys have heard David Goggins.
Can't Hurt Me.
Can't Hurt Me. I was reading Can't Hurt Me. And when he shot me and I was getting up after I got shot, I was like, this motherfucker, you can't hurt me. And it sounds crazy. And I know
that's
Yeah. Mark, you know who I'm thinking of? I'm thinking of Jason Redman, and I'm thinking of his story, and I'm thinking of
JT Webb.
JT Webb, yeah. We had a same thing, cop, you know. These things get into your mind, and this is how you survive. This is what you do.
Yeah, because I mean, I know, I understood that a lot of the times the mentality, it can dictate a lot of how the body is. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, well, I was like, I'm okay. This motherfucker can't hurt me. And I got up, started running, and we did our thing. And then that's when I went to the hospital. But I was awake, obviously. Like, just, I was like, oh, okay, like this just happened. And, you know, I got my CAT scan, and the doctor came back and was like, oh, you better go have a fucking beer when you go home, because it didn't hit anything.
Well, let me ask you, Mario, where was the entry wound in relation to your belly button?
So it is about, I'll say about 3-4 inches from my belly button off to the left side.
Is it the same height as your belly button, or lower or higher?
It's like a tad bit lower.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it didn't hit anything vital.
It didn't hit anything. It basically went in and went around everything, which is kind of, it's crazy.
Jeez. Especially with the hollow point, because the whole purpose is they hit, they expand, and that's the whole thing is you tear up shit, but you don't exit the body.
Yeah. Wow. And it was, it was wild, because when they said that, I was like, good. And, you know, at the time when I first got in there, they're like, oh, don't be afraid if you have to go under and you come out with a colostomy bag. I'm like, fuck. I was more worried about the colostomy bag. I'm like, I don't want a colostomy bag. I'm like, I don't want that.
That's the motivational speech. Hey, don't worry if you have to come out with a colostomy bag. Gee, many Christmas.
Yeah, I was like, dude, I don't want the colostomy bag. That is
one magic bullet, though, my friend. I mean, the fact that you got shot with it, and it avoided everything.
It did. It avoided everything. And I spent the night there. You know, obviously, they want to check, make sure I'm okay.
But when did they operate on you to remove the round?
This was about 5 months later at the time.
I had it in there
for 5 months.
Why?
They didn't want to operate because of swelling, they said. Mm-hmm. They were concerned about the swelling. I don't know, but that's just what they said. And
you're walking around for 5 months with a jacketed 45 caliber hollow point.
Yeah. I could actually feel it. So like, it was like back here a little bit, towards my back, and I could actually feel.
Did you ever
feel...
just think about taking like your Spyderco, you know, and just making a little slit and just getting rid of it?
Yeah. I did that and was taking metal detectors and just going beep, 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 and just, you know, having a good time with it. But, it was pretty crazy.
Painful, feel anything? Did it affect you in your ability to function, you know, normally?
No. So what happened was, is when I spent the night in the hospital, I had talked to the nurse. I said, hey, am I allowed to get up and like move around a little bit? And she's like, no, I think it's better for you to just relax a little bit and just lay there. And then I had the doctor come in at the time, the one that told me that I was okay. And she was like, hey, have you gotten up and like gone to the bathroom or anything? And I'm like, no. She was like, why not? And I'm like, well, the nurse told me not to get up. And I was like, okay. Like, she's like, well, you need to get up. You need to walk. So when I tell you that, it was the hardest, because I didn't realize how sore my stomach was, like how sore I was. And I tried to get up and I couldn't move.
Well, that's the adrenaline dump, right? Once the adrenaline gets past, mm-hmm. you start feeling the effects of everything.
Yeah. And this is the morning at this time. So like I go to get up, and my parents had come there, and I had to have my dad come and like, you know, grab my arm and help me up, because I could not get up. I was like, holy smokes, this is crazy. So well, like, I found
what a traumatic, you know, experience you just went through.
Right, exactly. And and we can back it up a little bit too, because when people came to the hospital, I had people coming in crying, like some of the guys that I worked with that, you know, I worked with on a daily basis came in crying. But I don't know if it was me trying to put on the macho man, you know, hey, like I'm okay kind of thing, or but I mean, I was cracking jokes. Everyone was there. So like, I felt good because everyone was there that I knew, and mm-hmm. they kept coming in. And I had one person from that we worked with. She came in and she looked at me. She goes, oh, he's all right. And then like laughed. I'm like, what the fuck? And like, she didn't even like say anything else. She just like laughed. Well, and, hey, but
the more important question is, how did you let your soon to be wife, your fiance, know about this? And how did that conversation go?
Yeah. So actually I didn't have I had left my phone in the scout car, when I was in the back seat. So I had texted them, or I had talked to one of the nurses that, you know, cut my pants off, and I'm like, hey, like I know this isn't a priority for you guys right now, but can you guys call my fiance, please? And she's like, yeah, just like, give me your number. So she gave her the number and she called my fiance and she came up there. At the time we had lived like literally like probably like 20 minutes away. So she was there and,
how'd she handle
calm.
It?
She was calm. She's a very strong person. And, I'm lucky to have her. She took care of me during the whole time, you know, at home and things like that. So I'm very, very grateful for her.
What does she do for a career?
Oh, so she works in health insurance right now. She's like basically a supervisor for Enhanced Health. I don't know if you ever heard of it. It's down in Florida, but she's remote. So, but yeah, very, very thankful for her. And yeah, she took care of me really well. But yeah, she stayed the night there. She slept by my side when, you know, I stayed there that night. And yeah. Pretty crazy to think about it now. Cause I didn't fall asleep probably till like 7 AM. I probably slept for like 30 minutes. Wow. Yeah. It was pretty crazy.
Hey, I know that there's some, what I want to get into though, is the real part that I got to tell you that pisses me off to no end. And so I'm kind of,
yeah,
as they call it, foreshadowing. So
yeah,
let's talk about, because we know now it takes you 5 months before you can finally get the round out. Right. So, But tell us about capturing this piece of shit and his girlfriend. You know, what are they charged with? Let's talk about the initial piece of the investigation.
Yeah, absolutely. So just before we start that too, I will say that they actually, well, we'll get into that after actually. So he had been shot so many times that they followed a blood trail. So scout officers that showed up at the scene when we had already left, they followed a blood trail to where he was at. He actually had broken into a house and was in the basement.
So how many times had this piece of shit been hit?
He got hit 7 times.
And I know they do the after action report, you know, they'll do the ballistic analysis and stuff. How many of them, you know, you had two officers shooting at him, right? You and your partner,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's so bad. The post-op investigation, everything like that. I could not tell you who shot who, how many times.
Well, again, we call that foreshadowing. That's foreshadowing kind of what happens with you later. Yeah. So,
yeah.
But who conducted that investigation?
So, Detroit PD did.
Now, the homicide or internal affairs, or you have a shooting team, or how does that work?
It was homicide. So, basically, homicide, it covers all of any shooting or attempted murders. Even if there's no murder or anything, homicide covers it.
Okay.
Yep. And, so...
The dude shot 7 times. Unfortunately, he lived. That's the takeaway from here. But
So he had actually been in the basement. So he was in that basement, and it was a black guy, and he was apparently, when they found him, he was white as a ghost.
Yeah, loss of blood, shock. We don't name. So, folks, if you want to, you can look up Mario's name. You can look at it. We don't give acknowledgement to the POSs, so we don't give names.
Yeah.
No airtime.
So when they had followed the blood trail, they found him in the basement and they had immediately got him. They said, hey, he's like here. So they captured him.
You know, the only problem I see with the investigation so far is they found him too soon.
Hey, listen, I'm glad you're already saying that, because if it was me, I would be like, oh, we need to pull security. We need to find this. We need to find that.
We got to secure the area. Got to call in SWAT. We really need to understand what's going on here. Let's get headquarters involved and have a meeting.
Yeah, this is a barricaded gunman situation. We need SRT to come in.
Negotiation. We need a hostage. Can somebody get Samuel L. Jackson to come in?
Yeah, exactly. We need to fly him in on the private jet. But so they ended up getting him, obviously, like we said, a little bit too soon, in my opinion, and actually brought him to the same hospital I was in.
Oh, Jesus.
Unbelievable.
Were you there when they brought him in?
So they had come in. So I wasn't in my official room at the time, and someone had come in and said, hey, they just brought him in. I'm like, okay. I'm like, why would they bring him to the same hospital? It's kind of fucking weird.
Give me a scalpel. I can finish the job.
I just go put some pressure in those wounds and make them bleed out a little bit. But yeah, he's at the same hospital. He survived. When we had our first initial arraignment, he was in a wheelchair. at the time.
And people are going to think, hey, guys, we're being cold and callous. No, I lived by a philosophy I learned in the State Patrol Academy, and I remember the guy to this day, Captain Calvin Johnson, because mm-hmm. we had some troopers get shot. I remember to this day when I was a senior in high school, I graduated, I'm going down to visit my sister. I see all these highway patrol cars passing me. Trooper Conroy O'Brien was killed that day in that field green. I can tell you chapter and verse about the case, but I remember what Captain Johnson said. He says, you shoot a cop, you're bought and paid for.
Mm-hmm.
And the first major incident I was involved in as a Salina cop, we had a guy kill Riley County police officer Don Harbor, and then they're chasing him down 77, and they basically, he was at a pawn shop, went in to do some stuff, came out, shot him. Riley, he was called a resident officer, so mm-hmm. he was called out, came over to do it. Anyway, they shoot him, the suspect's going down the road, and he sees they've got a blockade. I was in that area, but I wasn't assigned to that where they were where the final chase was. But the guy shot himself in the head and crashed before, because he knew if he tried to go through that barricade, they were just going to pump him full of lead. Yep. And to your point, this is the reason why people think in a civilized society, if you can't protect the protectors, if you can't make a clear distinction between the thin blue line about the sheep, wolves, and sheepdogs,
yep.
if you can't make that, then society, we're doomed. And so I hate to hijack that part of it, getting into your story, but my point is you shoot a cop, you're bought and paid for, period. End of story.
Yeah. And just to kind of piggyback off that, like people who are not in police work do not understand that you don't see it all. You do not see everything that we do. So like things behind the scenes, things, people that we arrest, they might not be in the news. It might be in the news, but you don't know half of the things that we do. And you know, half of the kind of things that some of the people that we have to deal with have done. Attempted murders on their wives or husbands, kids, their own babies. So, I like how you put that. Thank you. But yeah, he was at the same hospital, and yeah, it was not a good feeling, because I thought we had a little bit more respect for each other than that. But
did higher management from headquarters show up? Did your chief come in?
So, I think, yeah. So my chief at the time did show up. Okay. Yeah, he did. He came and shook my hand, and I was trying to stand up, and just to give the respect to him for him showing up, but he wouldn't let me stand up. I was trying to stand up, but he showed up, along, like I said, with a lot of other people, and yeah. But when I left, nobody cared. Nobody was there. So I just, walked out of the hospital. I didn't really see anything. I've seen a lot of videos and seen a lot.
You got to be kidding, because normally when you get an injured cop leave the hospital, you've got fellow officers there. You've got other people there.
That's where I was getting at too, because I've seen a lot of videos where people come out of the hospital and there's just a freaking sea of people. And I was not. It was alone. I mean, I was with my wife and my parents. So yeah, that was it. Just rolled me out of a wheelchair and said, "All right, good luck." And then I had to come back to do checkups and stuff.
Didn't have a cruiser there to take you home or anything like that?
Nope, damn. Nothing. But yeah, I don't know if you want to start getting into the other stuff afterwards. After
this is the reason we spent a little time laying this out, because I want people to understand what you went through, what happened, mm-hmm. who this piece of shit was. By the way, this was not his first rodeo, right?
This was not his first time with a gun. He was a convicted felon. I think at the time he actually had a felony warrant for carrying a concealed weapon without a permit. So,
and I've got pulled up the Detroit News from that day. Well, it was mm-hmm. actually a few days later, but the charges against him were home invasion, second degree, felon in possession, carrying a concealed weapon, resisting a police officer causing serious impairment, two counts of resisting a police officer causing injury, three mm-hmm. counts of assault with intent to murder, and three counts of felony firearm. So it's not like this is a traffic ticket offense.
Yeah, no, this is some serious stuff.
Okay.
Well, you would think that, but we haven't heard the rest of the story. You would think it's a serious fucking offense. So, so let's talk about where this thing starts going south, because this is why we're a little incensed about it, because mm-hmm. that's why we're laying out in so much detail all the stuff that went on, what happened to you. Mm-hmm. So where does this thing start going south?
Honestly, we'll just be honest here. Like, I had known based on how everything was going that it wasn't going to go the way that it should go.
Why? How did you know that?
Just because we've done the investigations, we've been to trials so many times, and everything in Detroit that you arrest these people who have multiple counts of felonies that get away with it or get let go or get cases dismissed or, you know, a jury of their peers saying that they're not guilty, things like that. It's just, I had a feeling that it was going to be like that as well. And then like, it just so happened that, during the trial, and Detroit was very, very bad at, if you're going to court, you don't know 2, 3, 4 weeks prior, not 2 months prior, you know, the day before. So we'll just kind of go to the trial at this point. And at the time, I had moved from Michigan to Georgia. For obviously, at this time, I had got to the point where I was sick of all the political stuff and things like that. So I had actually resigned after my shooting. It was a little bit 2 years after my shooting. So I had actually gone back out on the street for a little while and saw how things were going. This was during the George Floyd times. Did a lot of the riots and things like that of, you know, the white kids coming from the suburbs and telling you how everything was unfair to the police when they've never had encounters with the police before. And we could, it just things like that. So, during that time I'd actually transferred to narcotics. So I was doing narcotics and, I had gone to my lieutenant and I said, "Hey, how do I resign? Who do I have to turn my paperwork into?"
Well, now, wait a minute. So how long does it take a case like this to wind its way through the system?
Well, you would think it wouldn't be that long considering the seriousness of it. But in Detroit, it took, shoot, man, I think 2.5 years, almost 3 years, something like that. I mean, I could be wrong with the timeline. I mean, my timeline's a little skewed, but it was about 2 years, I would believe. But you would think that it's the seriousness of the case. It's going to tell you like, hey, like, okay, we need to push this one through because this is a serious thing.
Well, Murph, when you were just reading the charges, I didn't hear, you know, illegal parking or, you know, park in front of a fire hydrant.
I think every single one of those was a felony.
Yeah.
Stuff that you would do like 20 years for, you know, more than that. So
absolutely.
Where was the, we haven't got to the quote good part yet. And I use air quotes for saying good part, right? So what was the reason for the holdup? I mean, I know that in some cities prosecutors are slammed, but here's the thing. It's not like this was a kind of, in a sense, a contained crime scene. I mean, yeah, you had a shooting, but you had the initial stop. You had the place where the shots were fired. You had him where he was found. You've got him, you've got the girlfriend, you've got everything you need. It's not like, I mean, guys, come on. I mean, this is not like the crime of the century in terms of 50 different suspects and 72,000 pieces of evidence and 47 continents we got to go to. This was pretty cut and dried. Plus, you got frickin' body camera. The body cams show and the in-car camera show this guy getting out with a gun shooting at you.
Mm-hmm. You got four cameras rolling here.
Yeah, you got four cameras and you actually had seen the flame from his barrel. So there's that. But I don't know why it took so long. I know, like, obviously 2019 to 2020, COVID happened and everything was shut down and all this other stuff. And but beyond that, I'm not sure. It just took a long time. Like you said, though, I thought it was pretty cut and dry. I mean, we had did an investigation for a traffic violation.
They believe you, which they need to. The point is you got video evidence.
Exactly. So that's what I mean. It should have been maybe 6-7 months. It should have been done, but it wasn't. It took about 2 years.
And, so you moved to Georgia. What was the straw, the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back that said, "Look, I gotta turn in my papers." Was it one thing or just a combination of things?
It was a combination of things. I think like after the shooting, and then during that time period of how I was, you know, when are you coming back? Things like that. And this was even before I was even had the bullet out. They're asking me when I'm going to come back. And you know, obviously I was going to, they was required that I go to therapy at that point. And they were saying, "Oh, well, if you need more time off, you have to get on anxiety medication or whatever," and all this other stuff. And obviously the political stuff is a little bit,
wait a minute. They wanted you on meds to give you additional time off.
So one lady said that at headquarters, she was like, "Oh, well, you know, if you want to have more time off, you need to be on medication or something along those lines." It was pretty wild experience to hear someone say, but I was like, it's kind of weird, but okay. Because, and the only reason like I was like requesting more time off is like, obviously I need a mental break, but two, like I had just gotten shot. My bullet's not even out yet. And I know people who had torn their meniscus or did something to their knees and they were off for 2 years. I can't even get a year off.
Wow.
Like a year just to kind of get my shit back together and, mm-hmm. you know,
were you start still to work out around. Again? I mean,
yeah, yeah, I mean, I was
for 5 months. You still had a round inside you.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I'm the type of person too. I'm like, okay, well, when I went back for a checkup, I was like, hey, am I good to go to the gym? Cause like, I'm going to literally freaking kill myself if I can't go to the gym or anything. And mm-hmm. he was like, yeah, you can go to the gym. You're okay. So I started going to the gym and stuff. But I mean, other than that, it was just like, it's just the mental healing. I just needed to figure out like, okay, like I just need to get better. And that's what I need to do. Cause I mean, after that I got shot, I fell into a lot of like bad habits. I was eating out all the time. I probably gained like 20 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was not good pounds either. So yeah. But yeah, going back to the quitting, the resigning thing, it was a lot of political stuff. And, I know during that time with, like I said, the George Floyd happening and, how I was treated up until that point, after the shooting, like to get me to come back, I was just like, I can't do this anymore. I'm done.
Did you feel like was the, what do you call them there in Detroit? Do you have a district attorney or what?
Yeah. Yeah. DA. Yeah.
The DA. Did you feel mm-hmm. that the DA was invested in this case at all? Were they interested in charging and, taking this person to court or at least trying to get a plea out of them?
I couldn't tell you. I know that they said they were trying to, the defense attorney was trying to essentially fight against the traffic violation and just so that it would try to get rid of the entire case. But like, obviously mm-hmm. like it's,
well, you can't, you can't get rid of the entire case. You still shot right. at cops. You still shot a cop.
Exactly. So they were trying to say at the time they were trying to say that our investigation was invalid. So like our probable cause to investigate was not there, but it was because obviously he did a civil infraction. He didn't have a license, which is a misdemeanor and arrestable offense. So, I mean, there goes that. And then obviously he literally tried to kill three cops. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's fucking, like you said, it's
rinse. Sorry, pal. That's a technicality. Come on. That's a technicality, you know?
Yeah. But,
that's not the best part though, right?
So yeah, that's not the best part.
Is still to come.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I had resigned, I'm moving down to Georgia and for the trial, I had been contacted maybe 2 days prior to the trial. And I'm mm-hmm. like, I talked to the attorney and I'm like, listen, I can't, what do you mean? I'm in a different job. I'm working and I have to go to South Africa, to film because now I do film work, but we'll get to that as well. And he was like, oh, okay. So like, what do we need to do? I'm like, well, I can't do anything because this, you're telling me 2 days prior. So I can't, what do you want me to do? So I think they tried to push the trial off and they denied it. So they had to do the trial. So come to the conclusion of the trial, they didn't get, I had texted the detective at the time after I got my bullet out and I said, hey, I'd got my bullet out. It's at the hospital. If you guys want to go pick it up or if you guys need to go pick it up, whatever, for ballistics. And during the trial, No,
don't forward to the trial. You said yeah. that because to me,
yeah, yeah,
this is just me being a highly trained criminal investigator like Murph.
Yeah.
You're telling me that an officer who was shot is going in to get the round out. I've got a team in there, gloved mm-hmm. up, ready to go. The minute you take that round out, I'm yep. taking possession of it, chain of custody. We're mm-hmm. tying it back to the weapon from the suspect.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way I would, call me crazy. That's the way I would do it as a highly trained, you know, criminal investigator.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of what I was thinking. I mean, it's just things that you would think are common sense to people, especially someone who's been a detective for so long. Like you're just like, okay, well, I need to go get that because if it's just sitting there, it's not going to do anything for anybody.
Well, and especially when it's one of our own,
yeah. right? And yeah. So, do you want me to go on with the rest of the trial at this point?
Or yeah. Okay. This is the part that really pisses you off. So, I mean, so it does go to, so now does it go to, does he waive preliminary hearing or how does it go to trial?
I believe at the time they had waived. So okay. And then it went to trial after that. And then the trial's happening. Obviously, I'm not there, but the defense attorney is roasting my partners, basically at the time saying, "Oh, well, you shot your own partner," like and everything like that. And body cam is like, obviously, I'm like, why are they not showing the body cam footage to everybody? Why are they not showing the body cam footage or the dash cam? And my partner at the time was like, "Dude, I don't know. I don't know what's going on." So they go through the entire trial. It was like a couple of days. I think it was like 3 days at the time. And it goes to the jury. And this is the part where everyone's going to get fucking pissed off, I hope. And it comes back. He's not guilty.
The jury found him. Did they show the video jury footage?
They didn't show footage. They didn't go pick up my bullet for ballistics that would have linked him directly to his gun, and he was found not guilty. So this man, mind you, this man who has had all those charges and had prior charges before that, is now walking the streets of Detroit, now probably flexing that he shot a cop and got away with it and all this other shit. So now he's probably some fucking big time guy down there. Mm. So it's ridiculous. And but at the same time, like I told you, I had in my mind, I'm like, dude, there's no way they're gonna do it, because I'd already known how the justice system was working there. Mm. Like we have so many trials that we would go to, like holsters that literally like pull off their hip and have a gun in the car and it would fit directly into the holster and everything would click and all that stuff, not guilty. Or we would get like the racial thing. Oh, well, you just stopped him because he's a black guy. I'm like, well, it doesn't make any sense because everyone's a black guy in Detroit. Like it's like 98% black people. Hmm. But anyway, it's it comes back not guilty, and I'm like, well, I don't know what the fuck to say.
So why wouldn't the DA bring you up? I mean, this you're one of the key people. You were one of the people shot. I mean,
yeah,
they only contacted you 2 days before trial.
Yeah, it was like a couple of days before trial, and I'm like, well, I have another job, so I can't just like, oh, hey, I have to, and I'm supposed to go out of country, so I'm like, I can't just leave. Mm-hmm. I'm like, can you guys try to get, you know, push it off and come go like in like 2 weeks? And I don't know if they had tried or not, but they just went on with it anyway.
It doesn't sound like it.
Yeah. It does sound like they tried. What they were very good at is not trying very hard, and because they didn't try very hard, they were able to successfully get the case thrown out.
Yeah, it's pretty wild to think of all that stuff, and I go through that, and you know, one of my partners, the other one that was shooting at him behind the dumpster, was having panic attacks, and we go through all that stuff, we go through all that shit, and not guilty.
Are your two partners still on the job?
Yeah, they are.
Wow.
Yep.
Are they still on patrol?
No, so they are, I believe they're still, well, one is a motorman, so basically like a trooper. Wink, wink. I'm kidding.
Mad respect. All right, there you go.
And,
the Lord's work.
And the guy who was behind the dumpster, I believe he's still doing special operations, but it's different now because I've talked to him about it, and it's not the same as it used to be. It's more like, oh, I'm just going to go out and I'm going to answer some calls, and because if I do anything more, I'm going to get in trouble.
Yeah, rather than being proactive, they're just going to be reactive.
Yep, exactly. So, yeah. And where do you want to go from there, Morgan?
Well, I mean, where can we go from there? I mean, it's kind of like they threw you under the bus. Yeah. Getting a hold of you 2 days before trial, they got to know that that's, I mean, how... You know, I remember cases where somebody's, I think I have a case of the sniffles. Okay, we got a 2-week continuance.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
they do that all the time. I mean, what the hell is wrong with the people in Detroit there? The management,
crazy.
The police department should be completely outraged. The chief should have been down at the district attorney's office jumping up and down on his damn desk saying, you know, WTF here. Mm-hmm. The prosecutor that didn't follow through should go find another job. They should be let go. The detective that didn't go get the bullet, he should be shit canned. He should be fired for dereliction of duty. I mean, there's so many mistakes that were made in this thing. Mm-hmm. It's like when we had Pete Fraselli on here talking about Operation Fast and Furious, you know, where they've got other agents that are letting these weapons still go into Mexico. you got the U.S. Attorney's Office there in Phoenix that won't do anything, refusing to prosecute cases or even issue warrants. It's just outrageous. Mm-hmm. And you know what? All the people from his case, I believe, are still on the job as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm going out when we're recording this in 2 days. I'll be at Pete's new book signing. But you know, here's what happens though when stuff like this happens to you, Mario. People see this and they go, why the fuck would I want to become a cop when somebody can shoot me and then they treat me like this? They don't show up to collect the evidence. They don't show up when I'm one of theirs and I'm wounded and I'm coming out of the hospital. Tell me, you Mr. Recruiter, Ms. Recruiter, why should I join the Detroit Police Department or any police department if this is how I'm going to get treated?
Right. Yeah. And we'll back up a little bit too. We'll start to get into the other stuff as well. And during the time I was off, I was actually applying to different departments. I was applying to where I lived in Farmington Hills. And then I applied to a city called Troy, suburb department, safer. You're getting paid a little bit more, but I mean, you have to deal with some stuff because people from Detroit go down there. Cause there's a pretty big size mall. And, during that time I was applying to different places and I get into Troy. I start going through all the process. I start meeting everybody. And it actually got to the point where I was getting brought up at roll call. Like, hey, this guy from Detroit, you know, he has this, this, and this, Purple Heart, da, 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 da. Because obviously they're going to give me a Purple Heart and a Medal of Valor and stuff like that from the shooting. And they start talking about me at roll call. They start giving, I'm starting to get all these accolades and stuff like that. And it gets to the very last part of the process of Troy Police Department. And I get a call from my recruiter at Troy and she says, hey Mario, I just got to tell you something real quick. And I'm like, yeah, sure. Like what's up? And she's like, unfortunately we're going to have to pass on you. And I'm like, okay. I was like, is there a reason why? And she was like, yeah. So, supposedly Detroit had told me that you have been personally denied. You were permanently denied. And I said, excuse me. We had hung up and I was so confused.
Permanently denied for what?
Permanently denied. So I was permanently denied for employment. So that means I was permanently denied to become a Detroit police officer in the first place. Yeah. So I'm
confused. You were a Detroit police officer.
Exactly. She said I was permanently denied. At one point, that's what she said. And I'm like, I had hung up. I was so confused with her. I was so confused at what she said. And I called her back. I said, hey, I'm just really confused right now. What did they say? They said I was permanently denied at one point. And she said, yeah, that's what they said. And I said, okay. And I just kind of like was in shock. So at this time, I'm at narcotics when I had come back and I'm like emailing people. I'm emailing the chief. I'm emailing so-and-so. I never got any responses. So I'd found my card. So when I had first gone down to the recruiting office to fill out application and everything, and I had found my recruiter's name. So I called her and I said, hey, listen, I'm applying. I'm not even gonna lie to you right now. I'm applying for different departments and you're giving them bad information or someone's giving them bad information saying that I was permanently denied at one point. And she said, what's your name? And I was like, Mario Rodriguez. And she's like, okay, yeah, I remember you. And I was like, okay, cool. So she goes back. She goes, hold on, hold on a second. I'll be with you in a second. And she puts me on hold and she comes back and she's like, hey, I think you need to come down. You need to come down to the recruiting office. I'm like, okay, cool. So I go down to the recruiting office, which is at headquarters, and I start talking to her. And she's like, yeah, you were permanently denied at one point, but we thought you were going to be such a good police officer that we just thought we would reverse it.
Okay, this makes no fucking sense. I'm sorry, pal. I think I'm ridiculous. A fairly bright person.
So yeah, it's crazy. And I'm like, is there a reason why? Like,
well,
can
that's
you
like
tell
saying,
me?
Well, hey, declaring somebody, well, you're dead. But technically,
but now you're not.
But now you're not. Now you're alive. But you were dead at one time.
Yeah, it's wild. It's I'm like so confused. I'm like, so you permanently denied me at one point, and then you just reversed it and said, "Hey, oh, I thought he was going to be a good police officer." So, why not? I'm like,
then,
okay.
Then, so, well, then I'm sorry. By definition, it wasn't a permanent denial.
Right. So, and that's what I'm saying too. It's like, so if I actually wasn't permanently denied, so what is your parameters here to be able to tell people that I was permanently denied and stop me from other employment? And so I'm like, can you tell me why? She's like, yeah, I'll tell you why. She's like, I have it right here. Why? I'm like, okay. So I'm the type of person, I'm a completely honest person. I'll be open and honest with you. And if I did something, if I made a mistake, I'll be honest. Mm-hmm. So they had asked me, hey, have you ever taken any prescription drugs that weren't yours? So I was like, yeah, I took Adderall one time in college, because they were going to call my college roommates and talk to them about it. And I didn't know if he was going to say anything. And if there's an issue, I want you to hear it from me first.
Mm-hmm.
So they had permanently denied me for taking one Adderall one time.
Did they even know what Adderall was?
I don't even know. But I mean, like, it's not a Schedule I drug. It's not, I'm not doing heroin. I'm not doing cocaine.
Right.
And there are people that show up to Detroit Police Department with traffic warrants. And all they say is, oh, well, just you take care of those and you'll be a part of Detroit's finest. Or you'll have people tell me worse. I had somebody that I worked with in narcotics said, oh yeah, I told them that I did cocaine one time and everything was fine. I'm like, oh, well, shit, you better look back, because if you're trying to go anywhere else, you're probably stuck here too. And so she calls me over. We go and walk over to the lieutenant at recruiting. And he's like, we're talking. I'm like, dude, I'm like, you can't say that I'm permanently denied when I'm not permanately denied. Well, I'm literally work here. I'm standing here in a uniform.
That's my point. If you were permanently denied, yeah, then how the hell did I get a job at the Detroit Police Department, go through the academy?
Yeah. And that's what I mean. So like, he looks at me, he goes, well, you're here now, so let's just be happy about that.
Yeah, that just fixes everything. That's like, I'm not going to talk to you anymore.
Now, me to this day, if I were to go back to that Mario, if I was that Mario back today as I am right now, I would have flipped in the bird and, you know what? You can fuck off. How about that? And I would have walked out. I would have took my badge off and I would have just put it on the thing.
Yep.
On the desk. So, but
did you ever figure, okay, you seem like a decent guy. So Rodriguez, yeah. So I mean, obviously, you're not just the typical white guy. Rodriguez, I'm going to guess, has got some Spanish influence into it.
Yeah.
Where's your dad from? Where's your mom from?
So my dad's from here. My mom is also from here, but my grandpa is 100% Hispanic, but my grandma's white. My great grandparents were from Monterrey, Mexico, so just a little bit south of the border.
My point is that here you are, Mario Rodriguez. Who the hell did you piss off? Did you pee in somebody's Cheerios? I mean, what? I mean, you're just, no offense, right? But you're a badge number that's jumping out, hopping out, mm-hmm, working special operations, just having fun, right? I mean, it's not like, I know you were engaged, but did you hose the chief's daughter? I mean, what happened? Who did you piss off?
Definitely not. Definitely not. I mean, I couldn't tell you. I wish I knew. Like, if I rubbed someone the wrong way, I wish like someone would tell me. But I mean, like the whole.
I'm laughing not because it's funny. It's because it's so freaking incredulous. I'm going.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable.
You're one of 1,000, 2,000 cops, whatever else. I mean, you got shot. It's on video. I mean,
yeah.
This is a case you give to a first year intern that can win it with their eyes fucking closed.
Right. Yeah.
It's, and the sad thing, not only what happened, what's sad is what happened to you, but the fact that, I mean, that's just that's a smudge against every hardworking, dedicated police officer in Detroit.
Yeah. That's what pisses me off the most is that like, everyone complains, oh, we're not getting enough people. We're not getting enough people. But then when you have people who actually love doing the job and actually want to do something good for the world, and regardless, mm-hmm, like I know, like we can't make everything perfect, and by any means we can't. The point of even trying that is crazy. But I came into that job and I was like, I love this job and I will do everything that I can and I will do it the right way and I will work my ass off. Yep. I didn't make base salary when I first started. I made about 75. So I was working overtime, going to court, doing all these, you know, special details, things like that. I love doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you have people,
officers are.
Yeah. And then when you have people who are stealing time or stealing things from gas stations or doing things like that, or fraudulent time cards or whatever it is. And then they don't get caught, or they get caught and everything's okay. And let me tell you a little story about this. This is probably really going to piss everybody off. So there was a female police officer that worked at my precinct, at the 8th precinct. She was sleeping with one of the chiefs at headquarters. Mm-hmm. He's married at the time. And she's sleeping with him. He basically told, I don't know if he was up for a promotion at the time, so he had to make sure everything was fine, but he had told her like, hey, we need to stop. So she became so upset with him. And you can Google this. You can find this picture on Google still. She had posted a picture on Twitter of her with her duty pistol in her mouth.
Oh, jeez.
And she still works for the department to this day.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I know you guys are looking for it right now. I can see it, but
stupid. I'm going, no, dude, that would just piss me off so much. I mean, it's like,
and it's ridiculous because it's, you have someone like me who loved doing the job and was so dedicated to doing it. And then everyone fucking sits there and complains that there's not enough people hiring, or there's not enough people, you know, applying. There's not enough people that, well, like, you have good people there. You chase them away.
Yeah.
Your leadership is awful.
That is not leadership at all.
Yeah.
And that could be a class in what not to do as a leader.
Yeah, exactly. And it's insane because what's even shittier at the point. So my father-in-law, because they lived in the Troy area. So mm-hmm. my father-in-law had actually ran out of gas or something was wrong with his car. And I had went to go help him. And I go down the street and a Troy police officer pulls up. And he pulls up and he starts talking to me. I said, and I just wanted to let him know, because I had my weapon on me. And I was just like, hey, like, I'm a police officer. I just want to let you know I have my weapon on me. And he's like, oh, okay, cool. He's like, where do you work at? I was like, Detroit. He's like, oh, awesome. And he goes like this. He looks at me. He goes, is your name Mario? And I was like,
oh, God.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, it is. He goes, dude, what the fuck happened? I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, you were supposed to come and work for us, right? I was like, dude, I was trying. I wanted to. He goes, I was supposed to be your FTO. What the fuck happened?
Oh, and I'm like, wow.
I have no idea. I could not tell you. Like, and I knew what had happened, but I'm like, there's no point of explaining it, because it's just like, I'm over
it's
it. Like,
it's
ridiculous.
And yeah. I got to tell you, I'm sorry. I did it. I looked it up. I saw the picture. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, did you get a chance to look it up, Murphy?
Yes, I did, and I saw the picture of the chief she was having the affair with, and it's like,
yeah, and she still works there. She still works there to this day. But then, yeah, like I said, it's the most wildest thing, and I know hopefully people are listening. They're probably going to look it up as well, but it's crazy. I mean, it's literally our duty.
Let's be very clear. This has nothing to do. I mean, what we're talking about, we're not sitting here doing a lot of stuff. Is there race involved? Yes, there's race involved. We're not doing it because of race, but we're simply pointing out the hypocrisy. I got to tell you, can you imagine the risk, the liability, if you've got somebody who's got a picture of them on the internet with a gun in their mouth and they're still allowed to carry a weapon on duty and work for the police department? Yep. Murph, if you want a little bit of help, just type Detroit police officer affair chief pistol in mouth.
I've got a picture of the chief here. Yeah. I'm not seeing her picture yet though.
No, just type in what I said, Detroit police officer affair chief pistol in mouth, and then click on Google, then click on images. Mm-hmm. It'll pop right up.
Yeah, you'll know. Yeah, it's crazy because you can see it's our duty pistol. It's not just a normal pistol. It's not one of hers. It's literally our duty pistol.
Are you having a tough time finding it, Murph?
Well, I can't get a picture. All I'm getting is articles.
You got to go to images.
Here, Murph, I'm putting it into the chat. Here you go. I'm going to put it into the chat for you. Here you go.
Oh, I got it.
You got it? Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Outrageous.
I'm sorry. Yeah. We're having this is some real time just shit, you know, trolling, but it's like unbelievable. Dude,
yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. I mean, it's like, you know, we've got to, let's focus on you now, because if we keep going down this road, I'm going to have another beer for you. I mean, I can't. Well, let's kind of wrap up. And you said you moved to Georgia. Yeah. So are you still in Georgia? Mm-hmm. Where are you at these days?
No, I just moved to North Carolina about 6 months ago.
All right.
Yep. Yeah, I was there
Or you don't want to?
No, I live on the coast. So it's a little bit on the coast around Surf City area. So right by the beach.
That's a tough area there. That's a tough area. Terrible place to live.
Terrible place. Yeah, I hate it. It's so ghetto.
When you got out of the police work, what did you get into?
So right before I quit, I was actually on a show. I was actually on a TV show and they had picked me because I got shot and I told my story a little bit. It's called Unbreakable Mind. It's on a network called Warrior Poet Society.
I know John Lovell.
Yeah. So I was on a show on Warrior Poet Society Network, and I talked to the guys, made friends with the guys that were filming and stuff like that. And they were like, "Hey, I like how hard you work. I think you're a hard worker. And you seem like you learn very fast." I said, "Yeah, I actually absolutely can." And he was like, "He goes, you ever done film work before?" I said, "No." He's like, "You want to try it?" I'm like, "Yeah." So I was like, "Screw it, I'll do it." So I actually moved down from Michigan to Georgia to work for John. And I worked for John for 2 years. And then I did another thing. I went to this camp thing that, you know, people don't like. And just because they think it's BS and stuff like that. But I had met my boss now, and I'd moved down to North Carolina, and now I work for him. So yeah, I do film work and I do social media, YouTube, anything like that. And yeah, it's fun. It's a good time. I get to meet a lot of cool people. Obviously, I met you guys. I've hung out with Brantley Gilbert, the country singer. Yeah. I've met Tony Semenant, who is a character in Call of Duty and things like that. It's been pretty wild experience, and I'm enjoying every minute of it. So,
and then, are you still married?
Still married. Got the ring.
Kids?
No kids. Yeah, we're trying though. We're getting there.
Good. Good. Well, hey, John's he figured this out. He's got the social media stuff down. He's a former Army Ranger. Mm-hmm. I've actually bought stuff from Warrior Poet Society. So, I've had their subscription before. Probably had their subscription while you were down there doing the film work. And actually, I gave a 1 year subscription to Warrior Poet Society Network to my nephew, who is now in the business of becoming a full-time police officer up in Minnesota. Had him watching that stuff. A lot of good stuff on there. I mean, I actually thought about going through some of the pistol training and the rifle training that he puts on, because they put on some really good stuff.
Yeah, and all those classes are on that network as well, and there's like TV shows, there's a travel series that we did and things like that. So it's pretty, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed every minute of it when I worked there. So
very good. I'm very glad that Lou introduced us to you.
Yeah.
And I'm very happy that you were willing to tell your story, because this is so outrageous.
Yeah.
This is so against what law enforcement, the brotherhood, the Thin Blue Line represents.
Yeah.
The people there, and you know, the people that dropped the ball in Detroit should be ashamed of themselves and should find another occupation. So they certainly don't belong in our brotherhood.
Well, I got to tell you, I mean, there's one thing. If you lose a case on the merits, that's one thing. We've all had those things happen. You know, hey, look, just wasn't my day in court. But when somebody submarines you like that, cuts your legs out from under you, you know, basically screws the pooch to ensure that you lose the case, that's unconscionable. And you know who that affects? That affects the next person. This piece of shit is going to go out and attack and commit a crime against person.
Oh, yeah. Yep. He feels justified now. He's like, I'm untouchable.
Oh yeah, that's another thing. It's dangerous. He just feels like he's invisible. He can't. No one can touch him.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Outrageous.
Hey,
you know, one thing that you said at the very beginning of this podcast was why you wanted to be a police officer. What I didn't hear you say is that you want to be a cop so you could go kill people, so you could go shoot people. You said you wanted to help others.
Yeah,
and we preach that message on here that, you know, 99.9% of law enforcement officers go into the profession to help others. This crap about defunding the police, it sounds like that's really taken hold there in Detroit, which is a shame. We had a family member that lived up there for years and years and years, and all I've ever heard is bad about Detroit, but he talked about how good it was. You know, but then you hear this kind of crap, and it's like, why would anybody want to be a Detroit police officer? God bless you men and women up there that are putting up with this crap.
And hanging
I don't know how you do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very... I respect the shit out of it, but I'm very surprised that my two partners are still there.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. I mean, so, what's going to happen the next time? Heaven right. forbid they get shot again or injured again, but.
Yep. Absolutely.
Well,
let so, me all know get, what happens.
You get the, yeah. you know, it, people can vote. People can make their voice heard. You get the government you deserve. If that's what you want, that's what you get. And guess what? It won't be a cop who's the victim next time. It'll be you, the homeowner, mm-hmm. the person walking to the store. That yep. the mother with the young kid who's going to get assaulted or a stray bullet's going to hit them, like we've got here. Mm-hmm. I live in Northern Virginia, but we hear the stories from DC all the time, right? People mm-hmm. are shocked that crime's going up. I'll tell you why crime's going up. Fewer cops on the street, less respect for the rule of law, and people are allowed to get away with this stuff. By the way, Murph, as we talked about, quick shameless plug for our Patreon channel, gameofcrimes.com/Patreon, or patreon.com/gameofcrimes. I'm sorry, it is getting late for all of us. That's patreon.com/gameofcrimes. Even Oregon, notoriously liberal Oregon, after 3 years with their experiment on hard drugs, said, hey, guess what, guys? Not working. They went back and recriminalized yeah. everything that they had decriminalized. Folks, I mean, this is cause and effect. You're seeing this happen.
Yep. Holy cow, wait a minute, the light bulb came on in Oregon? All right, maybe there's...
Guess what, Murph? How many people had to die? How many things? Oh, how many lives kidding. Had to be ruined for us to get to
it's
this
outrageous. Part? It's yeah. outrageous. And all the people yep. that have busted my chops over when I was on a podcast with another guy and we were talking about how it doesn't work anymore. Oh, this guy, look at what they're doing in Portugal. Go read about Portugal now. It was a mm-hmm. dismal failure. It was all along.
But you know what? But you can't, that's a false equivalence. You can't say, well, look at what Portugal did. Portugal is Portugal. You know, what you can't do is take what they, well, if that's the case, let's do what Russia does. You know, you want to make sure that, you know, people toe the line, start throwing a few reporters off the balconies, killing your political opponents. Is that what you want to do because Russia does it?
Hey, brother, let me tell you, I was in Saudi Arabia in December in Jeddah. There had been 228 confirmed beheadings, public beheadings. In 2023, that stops recidivism.
Wow.
Yeah, and you know what? One thing I guarantee you don't do is you don't sit on the street corner in Riyadh or Jeddah and talk shit about the crown prince.
No. No, you, nope. you'll end up in one of those public beheadings. Yes. That's the guest of honor.
Oh, yeah.
You do. Hey, well, dude, I would love to go on, but I'm afraid I'm going to get more pissed, and I don't need my blood pressure to go up. I'm in good shape now. I just worked out. I feel buff. You know, I got to tell you, man, though, this is... I wish there were words to explain, to express how upset we are about mm-hmm. the fact the way you got, I'm just more upset about the fact that you people of Detroit, decided that it was okay to let a guy who shot on, my point was on video clearly mm-hmm. got out. There is no provocation to shoot a cop. Zero.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's, you know, God bless you, Mario, for being on the show, for what Thank you've you, done. Man. You know, things are working out for you, and that's, you know, I believe in divine intervention, and I think it had a lot to do with it. But I'm just glad you're still here with us today to tell the story.
Well, yes, sir. I appreciate you guys having me.
I'm programming RoboCop to go after this piece of shit, so...
I feel like at this point, I'm pretty sure he'll end up doing something stupid, and he'll probably get his. So
well, he doesn't. There is no retirement plan for pukes like him. So he's not going to be long for this world.
Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
they usually do it themselves.
Mm-hmm. All right, man. Well, hey, look.
All right.
Again, thank you so much. This is us saluting you. Thank you for what you did. Thank you for what you're continuing to do. Stay safe out there, right? And just word of advice: next time you get shot, don't wait 5 months to remove the bullet. I mean, you know, I know what they said, but you know, take it out a little sooner.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely will do that.
Just promise you don't get shot again, all right? That's all we care about. All right.
I'll try not to.
All right. Yeah. If Dodge, you got to just be faster, you know? All right. Okay, only cops can say this to other cops. Anyway, guys, yeah. But thank you, Mario. Don't go anywhere. Everybody else, stay tuned for the debrief. Again, I can't, you know, I think a lot of times we focus a lot, and rightly so, on our veterans who have been through bad stuff about getting the right kind of VA help. But we don't, it never seems to, something I've always kind of struggled with. And look, I was 6 years in the reserves. I've had lots of friends who are career military. But if you're in for 3 years, you know, 4 years, you come out, you're a veteran. You're always recognized as a veteran. But if you're only 4 or 5 years on the police, and you still do your time, it's like, well, why'd you quit? Why'd you leave,
mm-hmm.
huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what happened? So this just, you know what? I mean, I am so pissed off about Mario's case here. Just so you know, and I think we mentioned this in the podcast, the suspect was charged with 3 counts of assault with intent to murder, resisting, obstructing, assaulting a police officer, causing serious impairment, second degree home invasion, felon in possession, carrying a concealed weapon, 2 counts of resisting, obstructing a police officer, causing injury, and 3 felony firearms violations.
That's all? That's it?
How can a jury? They've got video body cam footage of the guy shooting at the police officers first after he ran into a police officer, knocking him down. The officers returned fire. How can they find this guy not guilty?
Because the district attorney put on a shitty case. They didn't call him. They waited till the last minute to say, hey, we need you up here. Well, look, even when you're the victim, you can't drop your life and, you know, 24 hours before you're supposed to be there, drop everything. How's he supposed to get up there? What's he supposed to do? Who's paying for this? Who's going to pay for my, you know, hotel room?
Outrageous.
So, I mean, that was intentional. They sabotaged the case. You know, again, this is a case a first-year law student would have been able to win just putting on the evidence. Put on the body cam video.
Heck, Mario could probably gone in and served as the prosecutor in the case and won the case.
Yeah.
You're right, man. This is pathetic. And then the fact that the PD, even though Mario's moved on with his life, you know, some people get injured in the line of duty and they figure that's enough. Maybe that's the good Lord telling them you need to go find a different occupation. And that's perfectly fine. But here's a fact where you've got a convicted felon out there who has now, you know, after you've injured 3 police officers, you're a hero in prison. And then the fact that the PD is not going to the prosecutor's office afterwards saying, I would have been up jumping up and down the prosecutor's desk.
Yeah.
Outrageous. You know, outrageous what happened to Mario here.
Yeah. What does it say when, there is disparate treatment, especially for our first responders. Look, we just had, as you know, here a while back, we had a firefighter here in Loudoun County die while fighting a fire. Huge service. Celebrated his life. You know, it was heartbreaking because, and there's still guys that were injured, just got out of the hospital here recently. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you have something like that, nobody leaves these folks hanging. They're out there fighting a fire. So why is it so different for law enforcement is that they would leave somebody like Mario hanging. They'd leave somebody like Tim hanging.
Absolutely.
Self-rule doesn't work without self-discipline. As Paul Harvey famously said one time, if you want a civil society, you got to act civil.
And what do we talk about? We talk about acceptance of responsibility for your actions, taking that responsibility, making sound decisions, being a leader, not a follower. You know, we don't just throw these things out there just because it's a cliche saying. It's things that we believe in.
I like what Dr. Phil said. When you choose the behavior, you choose the consequences.
It's perfect. Perfect.
Perfect. Let's get real, people. All right. Well, let's get real. Hey, we hope you enjoyed this. Go to Apple, Spotify. Give us those ratings. Give us those comments. Hit those 5 stars. It's magic. We don't know exactly how it works, but it does. Head on over to GameOfCrimesPodcast.com for more info about the show. Also, follow us on that thing they call social media at Game of Crimes on Twitter, Game of Crimes Podcast on Facebook and the Instagram. Also, go and type in Game of Crimes fans. Go to our Facebook page run by our favorite mafia queen, Sandy Salvato, Rules with the Iron Fist with the Velvet Glove. And guys, stay tuned. We're going to do a special episode next week, bring you up to speed. Like I said, want to hear, you've got some interesting developments. So it was a fruitful trip. Now
it was, I was a little wet when I came home, and you know, but I'm okay.
What'd you fucking swim?
I actually went snorkeling down there, but just taking the boat ride over to get to the island, we were searching, man. I think I got wetter on the boat than I did when I was in the ocean snorkeling.
Did you wear a thong? That's what everybody wants to know.
TMI. I don't want to run listeners away by me answering that.
So stay tuned for next week and find out if Murph wore a thong. Okay, guys. Well, hey. Thank you as always, and thank you guys once again for playing the biggest, baddest, most dangerous game of all, the Game of Crimes.